I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a local city that made national news for rejecting a Pride Month declaration has suddenly changed course under pressure.
I have concluded that majority of the residents support raising the Pride flag.
Plus, candidates for Washington Attorney General lay out their top three priorities, and an Oregon coach stood up for his female athletes, then he lost his job. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. It's Juneteenth. Nicole, I'm sorry I did not give you Juneteenth off as a holiday. You didn't ask for
it off.
Well,
you know what?
However,
I'm just grateful for the traffic decrease. Yeah. It took me about 12 minutes to get to work today.
Yeah,
great.
That's a nice change. I'm already being trolled in the comments because Matt Gilbert put a super chat in, says, this is a yearly reminder that Brandi said Juneteenth is more important of a holiday than 4th of July, yet she and Nicole are working today and will be taking the 4th off. Happy Juneteenth. I did say that.
I remember.
I did, like, okay, there's some nuance there. I do think Juneteenth is a very important day in our nation's history. And my argument was at the time, I can't remember how long ago I did this commentary, but my argument was, Nicole's already looking at me like, what is your argument, Brandi? My argument was that I don't believe we were able to live up to our promise as a country until Juneteenth, until every single human in our country, American, was free from slavery. And so Juneteenth, when the last remaining slaves in Texas found out that slavery had been abolished, to me, I do believe there is a very poignant significance in that. Like, how can we celebrate our nation's independence, and how could we do that when some of our citizens weren't independent, when they were still slaves? So you know what? I'm gonna double down. I think Juneteenth, from a significance position, is as important as 4th of July.
Bam. So I understand what you're saying. I think that when we celebrate the 4th of July, we're now encompassing all of that. So now it represents everything.
Sure.
So we're just picking days, right? We're just picking the 4th. We're picking Juneteenth. But I think we have now lived up to the 4th of July. And now we celebrate the 4th of July as independence for all, instead of celebrating the independence for just one portion.
That is a very good point. That is a very good point. So it's all kind of encompassed in the 4th of July. And so I understand that. We want to make sure. I mean, how can you truly be like, oh, wow, our independence, we're so free, except those people. You know what I mean? So
understandable.
Juneteenth is a very important day. Matt Gilbert, however, thank you for the $10 super chat just so you could troll me in my past commentary.
Sorry,
I sure do appreciate it.
I do think that it's sad that it has this because it seems to be stemming from some of the Floyd discussions and the Black Lives Matter and things like that has kind of, or maybe put this into movement. And so that's why I think people roll their eyes when they're told Juneteenth.
Maybe.
And it's unfortunate because it should have been celebrated before, right? But instead it's now tied to this movement, and that's what's making people roll their eyes. Everybody rolls their eyes when I hear, oh, why do the kids have a Wednesday off?
Yeah. I don't roll my eyes. I was not fully informed. Even 10 years ago, if you had asked me about Juneteenth, I don't think I would have been able to articulate to you what it was all about. So it did gain more notoriety during the racial justice movement and all of those things. But that's one of those things where I'm like, rightfully so. I do think every American should know about what happened in Galveston and all of that. So,
yeah, I know some kids that
come at me, bro.
I know a couple of schools that have to go to. They have today off, and then they have to go for 2 hours tomorrow, and then they're done for the whole summer.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous. Silly. It's like, just stop the summer at Juneteenth. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Anyway, one thing I can say definitively is that the American flag is more important than the Pride flag. Do I get points for that?
Yes.
Thank you. Absolutely. I appreciate it. So we talked on the show a couple weeks ago now. Of course, June comes around, there's all these proclamations and raising of the Pride flag, and oh my God, I went to a Mariners game the other day, and it was like the American flag, the Pride flag, the state of Washington flag. And I'm like, that seems like a weird order. At least the Pride flag wasn't above the American flag, but it still seemed a little odd to me. Look, I'm an ally, all for gay rights, whatever it is. I just don't believe that the government should have any role in promoting anyone's sexuality or anything like that beyond protecting the liberties of people to love who they love and to marry who they choose. That's my belief. So when you get into this, oh, let's dedicate a whole month and we'll raise the pride flag over City Hall. And I'm like, no, that's absolutely absurd. So that's why we kind of celebrated the city of Newcastle when they had a proclamation before them to recognize Pride Month and raise a pride flag over City Hall. And four of the seven of them were like, yeah, no thanks.
So if we start raising flags, we got to raise everybody. How, we want a Hamas flag flying over, you know, the city of Newcastle, or MAGA flag? How about a Trump flag or a you know, an Antifa flag? We're not going there, folks. Not while I'm the mayor. I'm sorry. So this is already an inclusive city with an inclusive flag that flies 24/7 over our city. We include everybody. We're not going to exclude somebody, and we're not going to say, well, this group is better than that group, so they get a flag or they get a day. Everybody is equally represented by the American flag every single day.
Amen, Mayor Robert Clark. Love that guy. Now, I mean, I think it's a little extreme to say the pride flag is the same as the Hamas flag. I mean, that's ridiculous. But I think the point that he was making was, if we do it for this group, what about this group and this group and this group and this group? Like, we have the American flag. It includes everyone. Let's just fly that. But that did not go over well on the internet in today's day and age, because I had pushed out that clip and it went crazy on the internet of people sharing it, because they were sort of like, I'm glad someone is standing up to the Pride Month pandemonium. But as these things often go, the angriest mob wins out. So there was a city council meeting. There had been a lot of pressure on the city council to reverse course on this decision. So you had folks who showed up on both sides, both people who wanted the pride flag raised and some who agreed with the mayor that, no, we have the American flag. That's good enough. It includes everyone. Our friend Jonathan Cho, of course, diligent as he is, was down in Newcastle last night for this meeting. And he took this clip of, it was so full. It was like standing room only and people were spilling over into the hallway. And he took this video of a guy who was there grasping the American flag and trying to make his case to the people around him.
Unite around the American flag.
You're totally
this flag
right.
Fly not just for the Christians or the liberals or the queers or the straight. It flies for every single person.
Absolutely.
We all bleed red, white, and blue, right? I come from a tribalistic country where tribalism, the end of it, is loyalty to the chief and whatever the chief says, which means there is no individual expression. So I want to tell you guys that you have a great country. This is flag that flies for freedom. But when we start having a tribalistic flag, we end up living for our own self and we abandon the very mission, which is out of many, one. Which is what our founding fathers gave, right? But tribalism says out of one, many. Which means that you end up having your own king. We end up taking a 1,000-year leap back into the Middle Ages where kings were conquering one another. Now we unite.
That, yeah.
We unite under values and principles that hold us as glue. Not just whoever thinks whatever their ways are.
Man, love it. Love it. Love it. He has such a good point. It echoes what the mayor said. It's like, we have a symbol already that everyone can unite over. Why replace it with a symbol that's exclusionary in nature, that celebrates a certain segment of the population while ignoring everyone else? So the question is, did the city council cave, right? Cave under pressure? The answer is yes, kind of. One council member caved. One council member, who happens to be the deputy mayor, Pratima Lakosha, voted no on the Pride Declaration initially, came back and announced that she was changing her vote. Here it is.
We did not want it to single out anyone and exclude anyone. And that is why we did not do even the AAPI proclamation. However, as a city council member, it is my job to represent Newcastle. And after listening to the voices of our citizens, and I also did a thorough analysis of the information that was available, of the opinions of Newcastle residents, and I have concluded that majority of the residents support raising the pride flag. Raising the pride flag has been a tradition for Newcastle, that has, they have participated this in for the last 4 years. And now the community has shown that they are unwilling to break it. So I, as such, I will be in favor of raising the pride flag. I'll see you guys in the council chambers.
Thank you. And so now we are going to organize our
Jonathan Cho confronts her. Hold on, wait for it.
House member, so help me understand what this all means then, basically. Does that mean you're going to issue another proclamation this evening?
We are not going to issue a proclamation. We'll see what happens in the council meeting. Yeah.
Got it. So are you trying to raise the pride flag now for the remainder of this month in Newcastle?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Interesting. Wow. Why did you decide to flip your vote?
The community wants it. As a council member, I represent majority.
How do you know the majority of the city?
Well, people have voiced their concerns.
But how do you know that's the majority?
They have emailed us. They have, you know, written to us.
So what's your metric for determining what's the majority?
I did my own analysis. Thank you.
So it's your own analysis. Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you. We love you. Thank you.
Yeah, she did her own analysis. Okay, I'm sure it was scientific. And I get it. It's like you want to listen to the needs and the desires of your constituency. I'm a big believer in if you're going to take public feedback as an elected official, public feedback should mean something. But for her to say a majority support it, there's just no statistical way for her to prove that unless they poll every single resident in Newcastle about how they feel. But anyway, you know, something I wanted to point out about this, and we'll get to the official vote because the mayor, Robert Clark, said something hilarious. Jonathan Cho, you know, I get it. You know, his presence at places really ticks people off. But when you talk about a mob, and that's what this becomes, right? When you're not willing to listen to other people's point of view, all you can do is shout them down, try to keep them out of the conversation, etc. That's mob behavior. And I just don't believe in rewarding mob behavior. Let me just play this clip. So Jonathan Cho's out there, this group of the pro-pride folks, they're trying to block a pastor from coming in up the stairs to participate and have his voice heard.
Why aren't you letting him walk in public property, ma'am? Ma'am, you're blocking him. You're blocking him. You touch me, you're going to be in big trouble.
Piss off.
Do it, bro.
Piss off. Piss off. Go. Piss off. Get out of here. Fuck off. Go away.
This guy.
Piss off. Get out of here. Go away.
You speak another language?
Piss off. Go out of here.
Hey, look at this guy. That's your boy.
That's insane. We cannot reward mob mentality. If you believe that you can get things by acting like a mob, and leaders give into that, that's how we get in the situation that we're in. I mean, look at Chaz Chop, one of many examples. Like, you acted like a mob, and you were rewarded by getting to take over six square blocks of a city, including a police precinct for an entire month, and having some of the individuals who were involved in it get lucrative government contracts. So we have, in Seattle particularly, and really grow increasingly so across Washington State and in some liberal cities, it's like whoever shouts the loudest gets their way. I don't care if it's the conservatives shouting the loudest, the liberals shouting the loudest, or whoever it is, pro-party, you cannot give in. That doesn't make you a leader. That's not leadership, to give in to whoever shows up and screams the loudest. And I mean, you see how absolutely unhinged that is. So anyway, here is the moment where the vote in the Newcastle City Council changed.
The motion on the floor is to raise the pride flag for the remaining month of June. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? No.
Nay.
Okay, the motion passes 4-3. At the conclusion of this meeting, Deputy Mayor LaCoccia will raise the pride flag personally.
I'm not sure if he's joking. So she's the one who flipped her vote, and the mayor's like, okay, at the conclusion of this meeting, she will personally raise the pride flag. And I'm not sure, but at the end of the day, she did, right? She had a little help. She had trouble figuring out how to raise a flag, apparently, but she did. After the meeting, go out there. Raise the pride flag over City Hall. I just thought that was funny. I'm curious. We've reached out to the mayor for comment, and I'm curious if he volunteered her to do that since she was the one who changed her vote. So the pride flag is now flying over Newcastle City Hall after a vote not to do it and then a vote to do it. Here we are. So about halfway through the month, it's a truncated pride flag celebration at Newcastle City Hall. But if you think that giving in to a mob is going to get you anywhere as a city, is going to teach the mob that, like, or the mob satiated, and this is the one thing that they're going to yell and scream about and get their way on, no, now you've told them, like, we'll give in to the mob. So next time you have a vote that they don't agree with, they're going to come back and they're going to yell and scream and shout until you change your votes. So basically you just become puppets who aren't capable of making decisions on your own and will fold to whoever screams in your face the loudest. Congratulations. All right. Last night there was a debate. Oh, I love debate season. Oh, I love it. I miss moderating debates. That is the one thing out of leaving mainstream news, because I and I wouldn't expect anyone to ask me to moderate a debate. That wouldn't really be fair if I was moderating like a debate against Dave Reichert and Bob Ferguson. I can promise that I would not be unbiased. But I miss that. I mean, I feel like I was a good debate moderator. I got to do all the good ones, the gubernatorial debates, the Senate debates. I had a really good time doing that. But alas, I will just watch from afar. So there was a debate last night between the candidates for attorney general, and this is obviously a very important race. We've seen the consequences of having a very ideological attorney general in Bob Ferguson. And so the question is, are we going to get more of the same? Are we going to get worse? Or do Washington voters want to take the AG's office on a significantly different path? So the, I should also know, we almost didn't have a show today. I was really sick this morning. I also didn't feel great yesterday, but I was almost ready to call it quits. And then I watched this clip from Attorney General candidate Nick Brown, and somehow it made me...
The show must go on.
Somehow it made me even sicker. Here it is.
So looking ahead, what do you think will be the three most important issues that the AG's office will be addressing just during the next year? Mr. Brown, we'll start with you on this one.
Well, I think that's the best question here tonight about what are we going to prioritize moving forward. And I think AG Ferguson has set a standard and a legacy for each of us to build upon moving forward. And there are things I would like to continue.
Oh. Then I was like, wow, now I really can't do the show because I just threw up. No, I mean, so here's kind of the lay of the land in the attorney general race. So you have Nick Brown, who would just be a continuation, I really think, of Bob Ferguson. I think he's very similar to Bob Ferguson. He throws me off because sometimes he's very political and ideologically driven. I think he blows with the political winds a little bit. And then I've heard him talk about things that make sense. And so I just think he'd be sort of a continuation of Bob Ferguson. Then you have Monica Dhingra, who is so far to the left. I mean, out in left field, she is the one who championed the no police pursuit policy, used faulty data to lie about what it was doing to protect people on our streets when it very clearly wasn't. So she would be even worse than Bob Ferguson, if you can imagine that. And then you have Pete Serrano, the Republican running, who obviously would represent a substantial shift at the attorney general's office. He's, you know, already been out there as a private attorney, you know, fighting against some of the gun control laws that Bob Ferguson championed, et cetera, et cetera. So what I wanted to play are just three clips. I encourage you to go watch the full attorney general debate. I do think it's a very, very important race that is maybe overshadowed by the governor's race. So I'll let, so the question that the moderator asked there are, what are three things that you would champion? Three things that you would focus on if you are elected to be the next attorney general of the state of Washington, the state's chief law enforcer. So Nick Brown said, oh, I'll build on Bob Ferguson's legacy, but here's the rest of his answer.
No matter where I travel in this state, what I hear from people are some common themes. They are very concerned about public safety issues. How do we deal with firearm violence, the fentanyl crisis? How do we keep people safe from discrimination in their homes, their jobs, and communities? That is going to be a principal priority of my office moving forward. We are all concerned about defending our democracy and our liberties. And I am very concerned about how those are being attacked now at the state and national level. And certainly with the prospect of a second Trump administration, we have to have an attorney general who's ready to stand up and defend the liberties here. That includes our voting rights, abortion access, protecting our environment.
Interesting. So he brings up liberties, right? That he's very concerned at a national and state level about our liberties being under attack? Huh. There's only one party in power in Washington state. So is he saying that Democrats are attacking our liberties? What kind of liberties is he talking about? Because then he went on to talk about abortion and the environment. We have no abortion rights that have been stripped in Washington state. So I have to imagine he must be talking about forced vaccines. You know, he must be talking about the AI program that the Secretary of State's office has that monitors our online activity to make sure we're not saying anything that's not allowed about the election process. Those must be, I think, right? The liberties that he's, you know, the hate crime hotlines where our neighbors are going to report on us for saying something you don't like, that those must be the liberties under attack that he's talking about, I imagine. All right, here is Monica Dhingra's answer about the three things that she would prioritize if she is the next attorney general.
You know, I will say it will depend on what happens in November. If there is a Trump administration, then we have to do everything we can to protect Washingtonians, making sure we're protecting reproductive rights, LGBTQI rights, that we are focused on consumer protection, that we are focused on data privacy. Those are all the laws that I have worked on as a state senator. I have written and passed those laws, and those are the laws that the Attorney General's office will be in charge of enforcing. So I will be ready to go on day one. assuming Trump doesn't win, I'll mention three top priorities. Consumer protection is very important to me. The manner in which all of us, especially our elderly, are targeted for fraud is becoming more and more sophisticated. We need our laws to keep up with technology, and we have to make sure the AG's office is going out and educating people on their rights. We have to make sure we're protecting our environment, making sure we have clean water, clean air, and I have to say, access to healthcare is critical. No matter where you live in the state of Washington, everyone should have access to healthcare from the top of the heads down to their toes.
From your head to your toesies. I love how her top priorities in the job she's seeking as the state's chief law enforcer would all boil down to whether Orange Man Bad is elected president. Like, if it's Trump, you can expect 4 years of Attorney General Monica Dingra being completely unhinged, not focused on any of the issues facing Washington State, but focused on Orange Man Bad in the White House, similar to how Attorney General Bob Ferguson was. It's very strange to me that you would dictate how you protect and serve the people of Washington State based solely on who's going to be in the White House. Yeah, that doesn't tell me at all that you're going to be an attorney general who isn't ideologically driven. All right, and finally, Pete Serrano, the Republican who's in the race, answering what his priorities, top three priorities would be on the job.
The three primary focuses will be safety, transparency, and making sure that we protect the people of Washington and your rights, regardless of who's in office, whether it's in D.C. or in Olympia. Regardless of whether I agree with that individual or those individuals, regardless who's in the majority passing laws. Safety, as Mr. Brown mentioned, we've got the fentanyl crisis. That needs to be prosecuted. We need the ability to have the tools of an attorney general who's hyper-focused with local prosecutors, with local sheriffs, with local police departments. As the mayor of Pasco, for anyone who's come here from across the river, you know that we are consistently one of the safest cities in Washington. For the 6 years I've been on city council, I've made that a high priority. I'm currently the mayor of that city, and I want to make sure that my city remains safe. Now, I do that presently in that seat. I'll do it as attorney general and make sure that you're safe down here. As far as transparency, we need an attorney general who's open and honest with the people. We're not currently seeing that in the administration, and I'll work to rectify that. And then lastly, focusing on your rights, regardless of who's in the other offices.
Yeah, and I'm glad he said that. Regardless of who's in office, regardless of who's in the majority party, who's in the White House, who's in the governor's office, I'm going to be focused on the same things. And the question is whether they're upholding those things or not. That's a sane way of approaching the job. Now, I'm not of the belief that it's going to be an easy road for Pete Serrano, certainly, to become the attorney general. That would be a huge departure for Washington voters from the guy that they've had in there for three terms, Bob Ferguson. I will say, though, if it's Monica Dingra and Pete Serrano, Monica Dingra is so far to the left, someone who has actively undercut public safety efforts in the state of Washington, you know, chiefly the police pursuit law. I think Pete Serrano could win. Because really, there is, I think, a recognition of how detrimental Monica Dingra has been as the chair of the Senate Law and Justice Committee and in not allowing common sense bills to be heard in her committee, etc. I think there's a bigger recognition than we may realize about how dangerous she's been for public safety. So that, to me, is the ticket for Pete Serrano, although it would terrify me to have Monica Dingra get past the primary election and just have the specter of her possibly being the attorney general. That's terrifying. So anyway, you can watch that full. It's up on YouTube. I wish I'd put the link in there, but you can find it. The attorney general debate from last night, and there will be hopefully much more debates to come. I don't really care about pre-primary debates as much. Sometimes they can get a little bit messy. I love the general election debates, and so hope the debate coalition is working on getting commitments from all the candidates to do those post-primary debates. All right, coming up next, there was some news that dropped of more local newsroom layoffs. Is it a surprise? Do we care? What's contributing to it? We'll discuss. First, if you're in the market to sell your home, I have said that you should reach out to our friend Wes Jones, a wonderful real estate agent in our area who's been doing this for a very long time, to great results. We had Bryce and Carla, undivided listeners, who decided to call Wes when they wanted to sell their home in Bellevue and retired to Florida. They were very, very happy with the results.
I'm just very detail-oriented and never put down our property because you could hear I-90 from our property. And it wasn't the most feng shui, yummy piece of property. And our furniture never showed our house well, our own personal furniture. But he was like, oh, yeah, he could see in his mind, this will show after the paint and the staging. This will be a premium property. He could see that. And he didn't let us feel like it was a subpar home the way it was.
Yeah, and they sold their home in 7 days for over list price, even in January with the interest rates and the market the way it was. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. You can start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. All right, some more layoffs in local newsrooms. And I always hate to, as much as I rag on the mainstream media, the old media, I like to call it, I don't want anyone to lose their jobs. I don't want anyone to be laid off. And I already know that for a lot of people who work in local news, they're not making a lot of money as it is. And so to dedicate your life and your career to what I do believe is a noble calling, if the power of it is used appropriately, to see layoffs happen, that's just horrible. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm undercutting that. I don't care what the profession is. Being laid off sucks, I'm sure. So we had, a couple months ago, Cairo Radio had some layoffs in their newsroom. And this has been a pretty common occurrence over the last 5 years, especially as some news ownership consolidates. So now this from the Seattle Times, big layoffs at Everett's Herald Sound Publishing. So the Everett Herald losing some newsroom staffers. I have some thoughts on the Everett Herald. I do think that they have done good work here and there. I've had some disappointments, but they're going to be losing some newsroom staff. The Seattle Times explains Carpenter, a Southern newspaper chain, this week informed a union that it will lay off 62 people at Sound Publishing newspapers in Washington State that it acquired in January. The cuts include more than half the unionized newsroom employees at the Daily Herald of Everett. It's pretty concerning, said Caitlin Gillespie, executive officer of the Pacific Northwest Newspaper Guild. These little Sound Publishing papers, it's bad news for journalists in the Northwest. First and foremost, news is still a business, right? And so, you know, they're getting down on this Carpenter Southern newspaper chain that's buying up all these local newspapers and saying, well, that doesn't sound like you're trying to preserve local journalism if you're buying these up and then you're laying people off. But in order to preserve some level of local journalism, you have to operate your business in a way that's going to be profitable, right? You have to operate your business in a way that's going to be sustainable. And so if you have some newsrooms that are not performing well, that don't have the readership or the reach, you're going to have to make hard business decisions somewhere. No business is going to buy up newspaper chains and then just operate them at a loss in the name of local news. They're just not going to do that. No one is going to do that. So yes, they're going to have to make some business decisions if newspapers aren't profitable. And unfortunately, that probably involves and does involve laying some people off. But whenever something like this comes up, invariably, it sparks this conversation about whether taxpayers should be funding local news, whether taxpayers should be propping up failing news publications. I just saw Derek Young, a former Pierce County council member. As soon as this news came out, he tweeted, "It's time to consider public funding for local journalism. Subscriptions and donations alone will never work. Surely we can build a mechanism that provides sufficient distance from government intrusion. Democracy depends on an informed citizenry." And it's, again, not the first time that that conversation has been raised in response to local news layoffs. You might recall several months ago on the show, we talked about this survey that had been sent out to Seattle voters. Our friend Ori Hoffman had tweeted it out, where they were floating. They were running a survey of Seattle voters to see if they might be interested, how much appetite there was for increased taxes, a 10-year property tax levy to raise $20 million via initiative to help fund local news. And at the time, I mean, that horrifies me, right? For the obvious reason is, and Nicole said it in our pre-show meeting, like it should be the distinction between the media and the government should be as clear as the distinction between church and state. It is completely contrary to the mission of the Fourth Estate, to the mission of a free press, the duty and responsibility of a free press, to have it funded by the government. You know, and Derek in his tweet, he said, "Surely we can build a mechanism that provides sufficient distance from government intrusion." I'd like to see what that mechanism is. But, you know, whether you have, and if it's, you know, funded at the federal level, for instance, or at the state level, and every 4 years you have this turnover in people in power, you might have someone, for instance, in the governor's office or a majority in Olympia who understands that they need to keep their distance from, you know, any sort of oversight, improper oversight of the news media. But what happens in 4 years when it turns over and completely different people are elected? Are they going to respect that as well? But I will tell you this, you know, he also says subscriptions and donations alone will never work. Look, we operate half and half. So half on subscriptions, half on advertising revenue. We do commercials on the show and stuff like that. And the day that that no longer works for us, if we cannot reevaluate our business model and find a way to be financially solvent, we'll stop doing the show. The bottom line, I would stop doing the show before I would ever take a dime from the government, before I would ever take a dime from the taxpayers. Because you might be able to convince yourself and tell yourself that you won't be beholden to the government or that you won't hold back if you've got some sort of investigative report into the governor or the attorney general or whatever it is. But for your employers who are trying to make sure that they can stay afloat, that's awful tempting to say, hey, let's bury that story because these are the people who pay your salaries. So that's troublesome that we would have so many people whose automatic response to media layoffs is, let's fund the media, the government watchdog. Let's let the government fund the government watchdog. I mean, we already see, I think, what that has turned NPR into, for instance, because there are some media entities that get funding from the government. One of the only media entities that I'm fine with getting government funding is, I've said it before, TVW, C-SPAN. Because what they do, by and large, is they just make sure that people have access, public access, to meetings that are happening, to committee hearings, to votes, etc. So that's a very easy thing. All they're doing is showing you what's happening on the floor in Olympia or in Congress. I'm fine with that, right? But NPR has much more leeway than that. They get government funding, and now they're just this left-wing talking head, basically. So I do like that the Seattle Times did point out one thing that I think is important here, an important conversation to have. Rather than how can we prop up failing news entities, why don't we ask why they're failing? What is happening? And if we can get to the root cause of why they're failing, of why their business models aren't successful, of why more people aren't reading them, subscribing to them, wouldn't that be a better way to save local journalism than saying, no, we're not going to fix anything? This business model that's failed, we're going to let it keep going. We're just going to prop it up with taxpayer funds. I mean, that's what the government does with other things that are failing, right? They just throw money at the problem, whether it's the homelessness issue or climate or whatever it is. They don't care to actually fix it. They're just going to keep throwing money at it. So now they want to do that with news as well. So the Seattle Times said in its article, concerns about what's real news and what's fake online are rising globally, and especially in the United States, where 72% are concerned, up 8% from the previous year, according to the Reuters Institute Digital News Report 2024. Trust levels remain low, with just about 40% globally saying they trust news most of the time. So 60% say most of the time they don't trust news. Only 32% of U.S. respondents mostly trust news overall, which the report said is, quote, partly linked to high levels of polarization and divisive debates over politics and culture. Digging further, the survey found 58% trust their regional or local newspaper. So that's not a surprise to me. So trust is a little higher when it comes to local news than when it comes to national news. I can understand why that is. But that's still not good. 58% for local news. And we wonder, okay, that says a lot to me about why local news outlets are failing, about why ratings are down, about why a station, like a radio station like Cairo Radio, is having to make layoffs and is having less rating success than they have in the past, about why a newspaper like the Everett Herald isn't able to sustain enough subscriptions where their new parent company isn't going to force off a bunch of newsroom employees. Content is king. I've always said that in news. I had a boss that used to say that all the time. Content is king. What you are putting out there will dictate your success as a newsroom. And I think trust is a big thing. I mean, you see like the Seattle Times, now they have this subscription model, which we have a subscription model too. I'm not gonna dog on that, but you have to be putting out something that people think is worth paying for. You know, we have a subscription model that's $5 a month. You get 4 weekly shows for free, and then you get some bonus content on Sundays and daily shows and stuff like that. And so if people didn't want to subscribe for $5 a month, we would have to reassess whether what we were putting out there is worth $5 a month. And if it's not, maybe we have to lower the subscription fee, or maybe we have to provide people with more stuff for $5 a month. So this is all this really interesting. It's like News is the only business that they look at in this way. Like, hey, it's failing. Let's not change anything. Let's just throw money at the problem and hope that it gets better. No, the news has to fundamentally understand why people aren't consuming it more. And then a lot of these legacy newsrooms, old media, they have failed to keep up with the times. They have failed to keep up with the times and how people are consuming news on social media and digitally and all of these things. They want to just cling to these old models of journalism and hope that it carries them through. And it's not going to. So, no, I am 0% in favor of propping up any sort of journalism with taxpayer funds. It's completely contrary to what the free press is supposed to be about. I pledge to you that I will never take a dollar of taxpayer funding for this show because it would be contrary to everything that we're about. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, would you support any amount of taxpayer funding to help sustain local news operations? Let's see what you guys think. Well, on Patreon, 99% of you are saying no. Lisa, I feel like news agencies need to be independent and not an extension of the government. They certainly should not be worried about funding for their next month's payroll when picking which stories to cover. Their coverage already has struggles with bias. Again, ask yourself, why are you struggling? And if you can't be honest with yourself about that, then you deserve to fail. You deserve to fold. I hate to say that. I think it's important that people have good, reliable information. The Fourth Estate is incredibly important to our democracy. But if you can't take a good, hard look in the mirror, you spend your time judging everyone else in the media, maybe take a good, hard look in the mirror and say, hey, why are people not subscribing to us anymore? Why are people not reading our stuff? Why are people not watching the news? Because all of that contributes to, for TV stations, can we sell advertising revenue? Well, if you're the fifth ranked television station in the market, chances are that you don't have a lot of advertisers knocking down your door. Come on, people, it's a business model. Robert says, no way Canada does this, and they do it selectively. Media receiving government money mimics the government line. As a result, inquisitive journalism is dying. Kathleen says, absolutely no, they are private businesses. It's bad enough that we are funding biased public television. And that might be, again, the one area I disagree is if it's the mission of like C-SPAN or TVW, where it is simply showing us for people who can't go to Olympia, can't watch the committee hearings and all of that, that's fine. Now, if you're going to start to put opinion shows on there and all this stuff, and that's where, if you're going to start to operate more like a traditional news operation, that's where I'm going to have a serious issue with that as well. Similar over on X right now, 100% of people are saying, no, I would not want to fund journalism. Spork of Pierre on Locals supports suppression, ignorance, and ideologically empowered lies. I'd rather eat my own blank. I make the best spaghetti sauce. That's disgusting. Thank you for that, though. All right. So moving on, I have talked about my speaking of the way that you make your business model successful. We have ads, and I just happen to also benefit substantially from my advertisers by losing 40 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. You see that? We get revenue to support our show, and I lose 40 pounds. What's not to like? The Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program really worked for me because I need structure. I need someone to tell me what to do. And also, it wasn't a forever plan. It was 60 days of really hard work. I lost almost 30 pounds in the first 60 days. And then you make some simple lifestyle changes so you don't feel like you're on a lifelong diet. You can go out, you can enjoy a vacation and, you know, dinners out with friends, etc. Have some cocktails. And it's not a big deal. So for me, if you think you can manage 60 days of really hard work and then some simple lifestyle changes for the rest of your days, schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. The consultation is totally free, so you can ask any questions that you have to make sure the program will work for you. All right, we have been on this show calling out adults to stand up for girls' sports, calling on coaches and parents to just speak simple truths about the fact that it makes no sense to allow biological boys and men to participate against biological girls and women. Well, a coach in Oregon did just that. He spoke out. He tried to push for change, and now he's out of a job. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All All right, so you guys know there were a couple high-profile races where biological boys in high school track beat biological girls because they're bigger, faster, stronger. Not a surprise there. A state champion in Washington track was a biological boy. And before that, a state champion in Oregon track and field named Aiden Gallagher, biological boy, won the 200-meter race at the state championship in Eugene. Here's the video. And people booed. And I would have probably been, I hate to boo a kid, but I would have been booing under my breath. Like, that's ridiculous, right? You just saw the pickup at the end there. So that is because boys are different than girls. So after that, John Parks, who's the head of track and field at Lake Oswego High School in Oregon, he said, I'm going to say something about it. I'm going to stick up for girls athletes. I'm going to try to get the Oregon State Legislature to make changes, to do something about this. And now, according to KATU and this report, he has lost his job.
I'm going to fight now because I got wronged. I went in this thing and I was fighting for girls. I'm fighting for female sports, and I'm fighting that it be fair for everybody.
At the state track and field championships last month, John Parks says he witnessed the crowd boo a transgender athlete after they won a girls' event. At the time, Parks was the coach at Lake Oswego High School and had written letters to the OSAA and a state senator advocating for something else.
Are you hoping to have transgender athletes excluded in any way from high school athletic competition?
No, I want it transformed. Sorry to use the pun there, but I want it transformed into a situation where they have a separate division, may it be, you know, we call it open, or allow them to compete as junior varsity athletes. But when you come to championship events, these things involve scholarships, they involve things that they have an unfair advantage in at the highest level when it comes to physical things. We're not talking about political. This is not a political issue to me. It never has been.
Those letters, he says, led to his termination. On Wednesday, Parks says the district ended his contract because of what he wrote, despite the fact that he says administrators knew what he was doing before he sent those letters.
I'm being prevented from speaking by writing a letter and not getting any guidance on this ahead of time. And being told that the letter was okay, it just makes no sense.
The district declining to comment on his termination, saying they do not discuss personnel matters.
Yeah, it makes no sense. None of it makes any sense. You're right, John. It's not a political issue. And again, this coach, John Parks, you might have lost your job, but what you were doing is so much more important than that. It might not be hard to see in the moment. I know anyone who speaks out and loses their job or puts so much on the line, you know, I have a lot of respect for, but you lost your job, but you kept your dignity. You kept your morality in the process, and you did what so many other coaches should be doing, but for fear of the consequences are not doing. And I'll tell you, it would take a handful of coaches in a state and in a district to do that and to make significant change, to say we're not competing, or for athletes to say I'm not competing, for parents to say my child's not competing until this is fixed. It really would not take as many people as you may think to push back. The fact that a coach, someone who that's his job, to coach young girls in track and field, that he can't even write, put his concerns in a letter to just spell them out and say, here are my issues. Is there anything we can do? You know, not hateful, not demeaning, not demanding, saying, hey, what are options available to us to respect transgender athletes, but to also acknowledge the biological differences and that it is not fair to allow female athletes to get absolutely smoked. So the fact that you'd lose your job over that, I can tell you then that's not a job worth having. That's not a school district that's worth working for. But for anyone, for parents of athletes, for athletes, I know it's hard to ask it of you because as John Park said in that news report, you're talking about potentially scholarships on the line, et cetera. For coaches, for anyone who understands that this is wrong, don't let John Parks speak up alone. Don't let him stand up alone. You know, we've seen parents here and there. We had Brendan, whose daughter lost in the Junior Olympics track meet in Kashmir to a biological boy, who I could tell he didn't want to speak out about it, but he did anyway. And I know that family has dealt with a lot of hate after that, speaking out about things. It takes a lot of courage And what you're doing might be hard in the moment, but it's going to be very, very important in the long term to try to restore sanity to this state, to states like ours in Oregon and California, and to the rest of the country. So we give a round of applause to John Parks for doing what's right, not for himself, but for the young girls who he coaches. He did the right thing. And shame on that school for letting him go. All right, coming up next, Cori Bush says that she healed a woman with cancerous tumors. We have a miracle on our hands, folks. We'll get to it in national news. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. All of us need insurance. The question is, do you have the right insurance for your needs? And do you have the right insurance at the right price? You could go try to deal with all of that for yourself, or you could have First Mark Insurance, a fantastic local real estate insurance broker, do that for you. They've been doing it for a long time. They never charge you anything for their services. It really is a no-brainer. Ben and Leslie took the First Mark Challenge, ended up saving over $1,500 a year.
You know, it's good to, just like you would go in for an annual physical with your primary care physician. You know, you may not have anything wrong, but it's good just to kind of have that, you know, annual check-in. And I think that's what First Mark, you know, the service and the value that they really provide is it helps. It helps you have an understanding of your coverage.
Yeah. And I think that's a no-brainer. So First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. It doesn't cost you anything. It just takes a little bit of time. So you schedule a call with First Mark, go over your current insurance, talk about your insurance needs. They go out, they shop all the carriers for you and come back to you with a proposal. And hey, they might come back to you and say, actually, the current insurance you have is great. I just stick with that. That has happened before, but knowledge is power. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right. Congresswoman Cori Bush of Missouri is apparently a miracle worker. Can we say that? Cori Bush says that she healed a woman with cancerous tumors simply with the power of her hands. Here it is.
You're a pastor.
Yes.
You write about healing through faith. At one point, you came across a woman with, quote, several visible tumors on her torso. Tell me what happened.
So at that time, I, along with a group of friends, we would go out on the street and just meet with people and pray with people and offer them food. And this lady came to us and she had these tumors. I mean, she wanted us to like feel them. And I just remember I put my hand on her and my hand just began to move. And the lumps that were there were no longer there. And she was so happy and she like went on about her day. And I never saw her again.
So you think the tumors disappeared?
I do. And this woman was unhoused. She's someone who, you know, had been sleeping in the shelters and sleeping on the street.
The tumors were actually kind of like, they're beetles. They're just moving all around. Look, I'm not trying to make fun of somebody who's religious and really believes in the power of prayer as a healing tool. But what I am going to point out is that if any conservative religious person said that they had healed someone's tumors by putting their hands on them, they would be deemed insane by the left. And this left who's like, oh, the right doesn't believe in science. They think that they can simply, they would have made it into a whole issue about healthcare and all of that and how the right just thinks that you can place your hands on someone and heal their cancerous tumors and they're completely out of touch and they don't want people to get the healthcare that they need, et cetera, et cetera. But when it's Cori Bush, it's like, wow, she's a miracle worker. Am I wrong, Nicole? You're a religious person.
Oh, no, you're 100% right. And I think that is funny. I never saw her again. So there's no proof that the tumors are gone. They might have just moved.
Or like I said, it was
maybe
just
they were floating.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, she goes, oh, so you just thought you you fixed her.
Yeah, I did. But you know what I mean? If it had been anyone conservative, any religious conservative person who said that they placed their hands on a homeless person and healed them of whatever ailed them, it would be wall-to-wall, CNN, MSNBC, like, you're crazy. We believe in science and healthcare and medicine and all this stuff. It's like, now, do I believe that, look, I'm not religious. Do I believe that she put her hands on a homeless woman and cured her of her cancerous tumors? No, I do not. So let's just be clear. And would I believe it if it was a Republican saying that? No, I would not. And if that offends you, I apologize.
This platform, I'm not, yeah, I mean, she's just put out there like she's a hero for doing this.
Right.
She's magical.
No.
No.
How is this the first time we're hearing about this?
I don't know.
Like, look, okay. I mean, if I ever have something that ails me, I'll try it. Cori Bush, if you want to come over to Seattle and if I ever have something wrong with me, yeah, like, I'll try it.
Give it a go.
Everything's worth trying, but, right? But it's so funny how the media handles things differently based on political party. And it's like,
yeah,
it's so transparent to me. Speaking of,
she just went on
the failures
way
of the media. Yeah, and then
and
she
went
just
back
left
to living on the street. So wait, you didn't help that part of the of this woman's
yeah. Oh, yes.
Ailment.
You're still going to die on the streets. However, you now don't have those lumps that, first of all, oh, wow, now I have so many more questions. How do you know they were cancerous tumors? Like, did she just tell you that?
Right.
And then also, you never saw her again, so you don't actually know, like you said, if you healed her of cancer, if the cancerous tumors went away, but this is just a story that you've now convinced yourselves that you put your hands on some bumps on a woman, they went away, and now you are a miracle worker.
I do think she's brave for touching lumps on a woman. But
yeah. Oh, that's true. If not for anything else, she's she's very, very brave. Okay, we're going to get to your questions and comments, then our closing sanity check, which comes from our friend Jennifer Say. First, reminder, on June 27th, our friend Zach Abraham at knowyourriskradio.com, he and his team at Boer Capital are having another one of their free Know Your Risk webinars. Look, we're all trying to save for retirement, and we're just hoping that the market doesn't screw us over and inflation doesn't screw us over and we can enjoy our hard-earned retirement. But these things are a concern, right? We're in a volatile election year. The markets are all over the place, global unrest, and then you have inflation to contend with. What you're saving now, is it going to get you the kind of retirement that you have been planning for? It's very important. Zach calls inflation the silent portfolio killer. So on their free Know Your Risk webinar on the 27th, 3:30 p.m., you're going to learn about how Boer Capital is always seeking to lower risk, lower cost, give you as much upside as possible, and then how to contend with this insane inflationary environment. So you can sign up totally free at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. Okay. Questions and comments. Bill Biz with Super Chad. Brandy, regarding Tuesday's show, Dow Constantine should employ the Ferguson plan by moving his office to a homeless camp for a week to further illuminate the housing market issue. He could have a potential epiphany. Yeah, this is a good time to say we reached out to the, can I say this? Is that okay, Nicole?
Sure.
The UW professor?
Oh, yeah.
So remember, Dow Constantine had said that his belief suddenly, after saying it was a drug issue when they were suing Big Pharma in 2018, but now it's a housing market failure. And that belief came from Greg Colburn, a UW professor who wrote a book called Homelessness is a Housing Issue. So we did our due diligence. We reached out to the good professor and said, hey, do you want to come on the show and make your case that homelessness is a housing issue? He said no. Was it a polite no?
Yes. I would say it was a polite no. I mean, he was frustrated with the coverage, obviously. But,
yes. so
he said thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, he was polite, but he did say, did he call it our mob?
Well, he said, thank you for the invitation. However, given Brandy's clear disregard for me and my research, I don't think it would be a productive conversation. And then he said, let's see.
He said our mob came after him, which it's not our mob. That clip of Dow said your name, not me. I just put out a clip of Dow saying your name. It was viewed like 6 million times. So it's the internet's mob, not my mob. I never encourage people. Don't be nasty to people who you disagree with.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes. He said he'd.
I don't have disdain for his research. Mm-hmm. I don't have disdain for his research. I have disdain for Dow Constantine singularly focusing on a guy who wrote a book and saying this is the cause of our problems when he's been the King County executive for almost 16 years. And he said 6 years ago that the cause of our homelessness crisis was drugs. And now because he read a book, he's like, I changed my mind.
He said, I've been inundated with angry responses from your listeners. I have conservative friends who have warned me about what is going on and encouraged me to not look at social media because of how hurtful some things have been or hurtful some things are that have been said. I'd rather not further subject myself to this unfortunate attention.
I don't like to hear that.
I know. I don't like to hear that. So don't be mean to these people.
I didn't see any...
this doesn't represent what we see.
I'll send him an email. That. If you want to forward me that, I'll send him a response. because I don't like to see that. But I also didn't see a lot of hate for him. I just saw a lot of kind of like
It not doesn't make sense. It doesn't
toward,
make sense.
Toward Dow Constantine.
And he said...
Most of it was directed at Dow Constantine. I didn't see really any hate directed, but there could have been. There was a lot of comments I didn't read.
He sent me a lengthy response, but he said, in some drug use, mental illness and poverty are individual cases of homelessness. No doubt about that. But those conditions don't explain why Seattle has five times the homelessness of Chicago. And he goes on about that, but that
it does.
It does.
I think there are you can't look at it as a singular factor. And I agree with that assessment, but there's a lot of different factors in Chicago. For instance, the weather. There's a reason why in my hometown of Fargo, there's not a lot of homeless people. It's because it's too freaking cold for 7 months out of the year. Have you ever spent a winter in Chicago? It's insane. And so you have a lot of different things from different policies, from weather, from addiction. Have they legalized
drug use?
Right, from legalizing drug use and saying, hey, we're not even going to come harass you if you're shooting up fentanyl between your toes in a storefront in the most busy tourist area of our city. So there's there's a lot of different factors that contribute to a runaway crisis in a particular area. And I would also note that we're seeing the same crisis in Portland. We're seeing the same crisis in San Francisco. And those three areas have a lot of similar policies going on. So, yeah, I mean, anyway, I don't have to reiterate how it's just ridiculous to say it's housing failure. And even if it is housing failure, it's the fault of the only party that's been in power for 40 years. So I don't know how they can just say, oh, it's housing failure. Well, what'd you do then? Why are you making it more affordable or more expensive to build homes? Why are you doing all these things that make the housing crisis worse? Why are you overtaxing middle-class families so they can't save to buy a home? Why are you doing all these things? So it's just ridiculous. But yeah, none of our people are doing that. None of our people are harassing anyone. That's what bothers me. None of our people are harassing a poor UW professor. It's the others on the internet. And I can't be held responsible for them just because I pointed out a simple truth. I'll send him an email. So forward me that. I'll send him a nice email response.
I sent him a nice one as well. So I think I know you did. We might be able to win him over, but I understand his hesitation too.
Well, yeah. People are nasty. People are terrible. Look at me. You know what I should do, Nicole? Can we do a segment? Sorry, I'm getting a little far afield. Can we do a segment, Brandy Reads Mean Tweets? Yeah. Can I do a mean tweet segment?
Yeah.
Man, somebody told me they're going to turn me into cat food. It's a semi-bird, folks.
What?
Somebody said they're going to turn me into cat food. I said, how do you propose turning me into cat food? And then some people called me a commie. And then there was a good one here that I was like, is this a threat? Are these threats? I can't figure it out. Okay, commie, enjoy what's coming. A bird supporter. Birds of a feather flock together.
These are threats. I feel like you should hanging on to those.
Well, look.
Sending them behind the scenes,
I've gotten threats my whole career. That's nothing new, and I do take action when there are threats. I just don't talk about it publicly.
I understand.
So, but yes, I'm keenly aware of what's a threat and what's not a threat. But turning me into cat food? What cats? You gonna feed me to Nicole's cats? If you're gonna do that, will you feed me to Nicole's cats? Because I like her cats, and I want to be useful. Newcastle overturning its decision not to honor Pride Month. Kathy says, so again, the bullies win. Yep, we give in to bullies. And that's how we've gotten to this point that we're in on a number of fronts. Police defunding. You really think a majority of Washingtonians supported police defunding? No. But it's like, oh, the loudest people are the people who are out on the streets burning things and breaking things. So we need to support police defunding too. Cowards. Spencer Cole, Newcastle gave the mouse a cookie. Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm.
I have another Give a Mouse a Cookie book. We will send it to the deputy mayor in Newcastle.
Well, the deputy mayor.
Deputy mayor. Yeah, not the mayor.
Not the mayor.
Didn't give any mice cookies. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Let me see. Greg Anderson. Old Glory is the flag for us. It is the flag that me and my brothers have all fought and some have died for. So every other flag means nothing, especially the state flags of all blue and purple states. But I agree with you. It is a flag that represents so much about our country and also represents a country where you are free to love who you love, to be who you want to be. And so that to me is a pride flag. You know, the American flag is a flag that should instill pride in every single one of us. Brianne Ledbetter, a first for me. I've worked at WashDOT for 17 years. I vaxxed to keep my job. But this year we got an email saying DOT will be represented in the Seattle Pride Parade. What does that have to do with transportation? Yeah, that's a very good question. Like, fine, if you want to march in the parades, none of that bothers me, right? It's the government. Like, for instance, let me just pull this up really quick. I know I'm just like totally off the rails, but WashDOT. So WashDOT changed its Twitter logo. Picture mm-hmm. to like, you know, Juneteenth colors. And then it tweeted out June. And this is a state agency that's falling apart, like can't even operate ferries on time and on schedule and all this stuff. Juneteenth commemorates the emancipation of the last remaining enslaved people in the U.S. This is a day to celebrate freedom. It's also a day to reflect on historical and current systemic injustices and remember that our work towards equity and inclusivity is not yet done. You can learn more about our commitment to actively combat racism and to strengthen our anti-racist diversity, equity, inclusion efforts here. It's like, how about you just get a ferry to run on schedule, right? Like, yeah. How about you just do the very basics? And so we have a government that's failing in so many arenas, yet it wants to continue to focus on political and social issues. And I'm not saying emancipation is a political or social issue. The emancipation of the last remaining slaves isn't really a controversial thing. But when you have a government entity that's failing at the core parts of its job, mm-hmm. like maybe you spend less time doing stuff like that and virtue signaling and more time like actually fulfilling your core obligation to the people of Washington State. Let's see. On the AG debate, Diana Manning, Washington State Standard shows the funding for each of these candidates. Pete Serrano needs some serious help. Yeah,
he does. And I think that's because so much is focused on the governor race. Yeah.
So well, that's always true.
I know, but that's good. A good reminder.
Good reminder that if you mm-hmm. support a candidate, and I'm telling you, like $20, $50, $100, you don't have to go in there and max out for candidates. But if there's a candidate you believe in, to get their message out, they need some funding. So consider, you know, $5 here, $5 there if you've got someone you like. Okay, on the layoffs at the Everett Herald, Karen, we quit the Everett Herald several years ago because of their left leanings and no local news. And the no local news is a result also of a lack of staffing. So then you rely on wire services, and that's why in the Seattle Times and other local news entities, you see so many AP stories, Associated Press stories, National Wire Service. So then it's like, well, why am I going to come to you for stories that are all over the place
locally? What I wish they would do is restructure. I think there are too many managers, too many upper levels, the money's going too many places. That's why we're successful.
There's two of
three,
us.
Three of us.
Four.
Four, if you count Miranda. Yeah. And so there's four of us.
Of course we count Miranda.
Of course we do.
I'm going to tell Miranda you said that. Oh my gosh.
Of course.
She almost died, Nicole. That's so mean.
Of course. Of course we count Miranda. But I think it's these unnecessary positions. I mean, that's why they're just structured terrible. I mean, I will say at Cairo, I had, you know, there's three different managers. Why? I do the same job every day. I do it on my own. I don't have to go to a manager. Why do I need three managers?
Always an issue in newsrooms.
Always being there, making more money than me and everybody else.
Way too many micromanaging managers. Every newsroom I've ever worked in has been that way. Like positions where you're like, what is that for? You know, so they need to be lean and mean in the management if what their goal is to get more news and information out to people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just interesting. And then also just consider, why are people not watching you? Why are your ratings down? It's a combination of they don't trust you and you need to go where they are. You know, we're across all different platforms. This show streams on Facebook, it streams on YouTube, it streams on Patreon and Locals, it's posted on X. So it's like, we're gonna go where people are and then hope that we can reach the ones who wanna subscribe to our show, mm-hmm. like you, right? None of you are freeloading, are you? We met a nice woman at, this is such a funny story. Sorry, we're going long. Who cares? We're just chit-chatting, right? We met a couple. This was so nice. We were down in Bonnie Lake.
When?
Yeah, oh, this Bonnie weekend. Lake. Yes, we went to the Bonnie Lake Tavern, and Nicole and I bellied up to the bar, and there was a couple next to us that were fans, and we got talking, and she says, we've been freeloading, but now we're going to subscribe. And I said, oh, that's great. They were so, so nice. We loved Bonnie
Lake. They also bought us drinks.
Yeah, and they bought us a round of drinks. So, yeah, super nice. But okay, Denise says, ack, don't stop the show and stick to your guns to not take funding. Denise with the $5 super chat. I'm not saying we're going to. Our show is fine. We're doing fine. We, again, you reassess, right? The first thing we would do if we weren't making enough money to get by is we would have an assessment as to why. Do we need to add another sponsor? Are we losing subscribers? The nice thing about having a diversified, and people sometimes, you know, they'll message me, I hate all the ads and all this stuff. It's like, well, that's what keeps us going. So you have to diversify. So subscriptions are nice. They ebb and flow a little bit. Yeah. But for the most part, you're not going to lose all your subscribers in one day. Mm-hmm. So advertising revenue is much more fickle because you're looking at the economy, like the market, you know, like a weight loss advertiser. We'd love to have them. But what if, you know, you've got these magic injections for pills and stuff. And like, then the summer months, nobody wants to diet in the summer, whatever mm-hmm. it is. And so advertising revenue is very fickle. So to me, subscriptions provide us much more of a baseline for our funding, so we don't have like ups and downs where we're struggling to pay our bills.
Right.
So I like the diversification, if you will.
Yes. I mean, yes, to all of that. And know your audience. Respect your audience. I think that's our biggest thing.
Yes.
Is people know we respect them and we know our audience.
Yeah. And
we know what they want to hear and what they respect hearing.
Right.
And
I had a guy message me the other day on Patreon who's a subscriber, and he said, I agree with you approximately 50% of the time, and the other 50%, I don't. And I love that.
Right. So, you know, that's right. And by saying know your audience and give them what they want, it's not give them what you don't believe. It's deliver it in a method that they believe in and that they respect, right?
Well, right. And also give them something unique. Like, you turn on any of the local TV stations, you're going to get the same exact top 10 stories on repeat for an hour. And it's like, okay, well, what is making you unique? What's making you interesting? What's making people drawn to you? And we cover the news in a way that's specific to our show and that we hope people appreciate. Doesn't mean I'm always, it never is going to mean, as evidenced by the semi-bird stuff, mm-hmm. that I'm going to just kowtow to what I think the prevailing ideology of our viewers and listeners are. I think there are far more Republicans who watch this show than there are Democrats. But that certainly doesn't mean that I'm going to agree with Republicans on every issue, as we've seen. Now one bird supporter saying they're going to turn me into cat food.
I think this week, I don't like that at all.
Like, are you going to grind me up in a meat grinder? What is that?
Stop.
Throw in some peas and carrots?
Don't even talk like that. It's yucky.
Yeah. Just because you have cats and now you're thinking about them eating human flesh.
No, I'm thinking of them like thinking bad things, hurting you. Like, yuck.
You can't hurt this.
Terrible.
You can't hurt steel.
I also think that Dow's story, the
no
story,
comment on my muscles. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Keep going.
You're taunting. I think that, the Dow story is a great example of what we do differently here, because everybody knew that he was giving that speech. Nobody listened to it with the kind of ears that we did. I mean, that cut was pulled on another outlet and I heard it, but there was no commentary given. Nobody pulled that and then talked about it.
Or no context, right?
No context. And then we did. And then everybody's like, oh, wait, maybe that does like mean we should cover it.
Yeah, we get 6 million views on it. And all of a sudden they're like, we want to cover that.
We should probably cover that, right? But nobody's listening with those ears, the government watchdog ears. And I think, you know, Dory often got put in this Republican thing, which he never identified as a Republican as well. But because he said he was a watchdog of government, they're like, oh, Republican. No, like, we all should be watchdogs of government.
100%.
Left, right, in between, everybody, the news, everybody should be thinking critically about what they hear from a politician, and nobody does.
No, it's very rare. It's funny, though. People are taking our whole conversation about local news funding, and they're saying, are you guys struggling? Do you need money? No, we're doing fine.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Nicole's like this. We're doing fine. The very best thing you can do for the show is support us for $5 a month. We love the $5 a month subscriptions, and they're great, but this is a continuation of the conversation we were having about local newsrooms having layoffs.
And we're just as frustrated as everybody else with the direction media has gone.
Yeah, and look, if we ever got into a financial pickle, the very first person to lose their job would be me. I'd be like, okay, bye, Nicole, see you. It's on you. Nicole's got it.
I just sit here and and turn on the camera.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Nicole's like, people are asking if we need money. Nicole's like, yes, we do. We're fine. But yeah, subscribe. Okay, what are we doing here? Calf and Cranky Pants, I want my news based on facts, not feelings. Brett Hammond, Fearmonger Daily is what they should call themselves. Us or someone else? Everett Herald, the news? I don't know. Old Sub Sailor with a $50 super chat in support of our independent truth sayers, Brandy, Nicole, and Dee. We are lucky to have you. Hey, don't forget Miranda. Nicole already wished her away. And Miranda. On the coach who spoke out in Oregon, Mandy, just a new version of the same thing. Jab or lose your job. Now it's boys and girls sports or lose your job. Yeah. The government is vindictive. When you don't do what the government wants you to do, the government can be very, very vindictive and make it hard for you to speak simple truths and to push back against what the government is doing. Mm-hmm. That was fun. Mm-hmm. All right, Nicole, thank you. And with that, we will get to our closing sanity check. All right. So speaking of saying what needs to be said, so you'll remember Jennifer Tsai. So Jennifer Tsai was next in line to be the chief executive officer for Levi Strauss Company, but then she defended women in women's sports, and she also talked about school closures during the pandemic, and she was canceled. She basically was forced to leave Levi Strauss, and she has now since gone all in and said, I don't care. You can't do anything to me anymore, and so I'm going to continue to speak up for what I believe in. So she has an athletic wear company that was launched in March, and they decided that they were going to advertise on TikTok. Well, that was short-lived. So Jennifer Tsai sent out a couple tweets. So back in March, she said, today I'm launching my own clothing brand. It's the only athletic brand to stand up for female athletes and the protection of women's sports. It's called XXXY Athletics. I hope you'll join us. I see what you're doing there, Jennifer. And Jennifer's like a classic liberal. And so she was just blown away by all these people and her friends. We had her on Sundays with Subscribers 1 week who were just like suddenly turning on her over the simplest things. So anyway, she starts running ads for XXXY on TikTok. And that was short-lived. She sent out a tweet saying, when you run an ad standing up for women and girls' sports, you get banned for life from TikTok USA. She said, here's the ad. Offensive, right? I'll let you guys decide for yourselves.
If you think girls and women's equality matter, stand up. If girls and women's sports matter, and you want your daughters to have the same opportunity you had, stand up. If you know that it isn't fair or safe to allow males to compete in girls' sports because it's, well, obvious, stand up. Don't be cowed by people who call you a bigot. You're not a bigot. Don't let men tell us how to be good girls. Don't let others tell you you just need to be quiet. Sit down. Be nice. It's not nice to further a lie. It's not mean to believe in women's equality. We deserve our own sports, privacy, fairness, safety. We deserve a chance to compete and win. So don't be nice. Don't be careful. Be honest. Be brave. Fight for women. We've come too far to give up now. And if you agree with that, stand up and stand with us.
Amen. And in honor of TikTok banning that ad, I'm going to go out and buy something from XXXY Sports. You should too. And you can share that video to make sure that it keeps spreading. Sanity all day long. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being. It was a fun one. I had a good time today, you know?
Well, good. It started off rough with your illness.
So. Yeah, I still don't feel particularly great. Okay. However, I'm glad we came today.
Go get this.
It's been a while since I canceled a show over not feeling well. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I ever have.
No,
but
did.
We're not going to start today. Nicole's like, oh, yeah, you did. Nicole still remembers. All right, if you want to sign up to support the show, you can do it for just $5 a month at undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. Help us continue this mission and this movement to give common sense. Come back, shop our merch store while you're there. 25% off with the promo code SANITY24. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.